In 2 Chronicles, we've looked at Solomon and talked about the gift that God had given to him, wisdom, honor, and riches. And we looked at the prayer of Solomon at the dedication of the temple. We talked about God and his answer to Solomon. And as we continue on looking through this book of 2 Chronicles, it's going to continue to tell us of the journey of the line of David and the kings that come after him. We know that in 2 Chronicles, in chapter 9, we see that the queen of Sheba comes and meets with Solomon. Just look briefly back at chapter 9, look at verse 3, when the queen of Sheba, 2 Chronicles chapter 9, verse 3, when the queen of Sheba had seen the wisdom of Solomon and the house that he had built and the meat of his table and the sitting of his servants and the attendance of his ministers and their apparel, his cupbearers also, and their apparel and his ascent by which he went up into the house of the Lord, there was no more spirit in her. And she said to the king, "It was a true report which I heard in mine own land of thine acts and of thy wisdom. Howbeit I believed not their words until I came and mine eyes had seen it. And behold, the one half of the greatness of thy wisdom was not told me. For thou exceedest the fame that I heard. Happy are thy men, and happy are these thy servants which stand continually before thee and hear thy wisdom. Blessed be the Lord thy God, which delighteth in thee to set thee on his throne, to be king for the Lord thy God, because thy God loved Israel, to establish them forever. Therefore made he thee king over them, to do judgment and justice." I share that with you just to help you realize the extent of Solomon and his wisdom and his honor and his riches. The queen of Sheba comes, and that is her response. She's just overcome by his wealth, his greatness, and his wisdom. And I note in verse 8 that she speaks of the Lord, Solomon's God. She recognizes blessing coming from the Lord. I also want you to note that Solomon enjoyed worldwide fame. If you look at 2 Chronicles chapter 9, verse 22, we read, "And King Solomon passed all the kings of the earth in riches and wisdom." No matter how you interpret that, that's incredible. "All the kings of the earth in riches and wisdom, and all the kings of the earth sought the presence of Solomon to hear his wisdom that God had put in his heart. And they brought every man his present, vessels of silver and vessels of gold and raiment, harness and spices, horses and mules, a rate year by year." Solomon enjoyed incredible riches and honor to the point that it was a worldwide fame. We come down to verses 30 and 31, and we read, "And Solomon reigned in Jerusalem over all Israel 40 years, and Solomon slept with his fathers, and he was buried in the city of David his father, and Rehoboam his son reigned in his stead." So here we have Solomon's son Rehoboam is going to assuming the throne after Solomon his father has died. So Rehoboam, he's not a young man. He's been around for some time. And so now he goes to Shechem, chapter 10, verse 1, "For to Shechem, where all Israel came to make him king. And it came to pass when Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, who was in Egypt, where he had fled from the presence of Solomon the king, heard it, that Jeroboam returned out of Egypt." All right, we've got to talk just briefly about some backstory here. This is the accounting of Rehoboam and his time as king. It goes up through chapter 12 and verse 16. But what is fascinating is the success of Rehoboam as king is largely pinned upon his father's failure to follow after God. The Lord has already determined what's going to happen to the kingdom under Rehoboam. I want to just encourage you to hold your place in 2 Chronicles chapter 10 and go to 1 Kings chapter 11. Now, we're doing all of this because I believe it's important for you to see God in the details, to see what God is doing here behind the scenes. Because I believe Rehoboam understood what we're going to read here. Because he's not a little kid here. He would have spent time with his father. And you're going to discern here that his father knew very well what was happening with Jeroboam. And I would have pretty good confidence that Solomon would tell his son, this is what's happening. So just look at 1 Kings chapter 11. Look at verse 26. We see Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, an Ephrathite of Zereda. So he's of the tribe of Ephraim. And so Solomon's servant, he's a servant of Solomon, whose mother's name was Zerah, a widow woman, even he lifted up his hand against the king. And this was the cause that he lifted up his hand against the king. So here's the report. Solomon built Millo and repaired the breaches of the city of David, his father, and the man Jeroboam was a mighty man of valor. And Solomon, seeing the young man that he was industrious, he made him ruler over all the charge of the house of Joseph. So Jeroboam is a man of valor. He's industrious. And Solomon recognizes this and puts him in charge of the tribes of Joseph, which would have been Ephraim and Manasseh. And it came to pass at that time when Jeroboam went out of Jerusalem that the prophet Ahijah, the Shilonite, found him in the way, and he had clad himself with a new garment, and they too were alone in the field. And Ahijah caught the new garment that was on him and rent it or tore it in 12 pieces. And he said to Jeroboam, take thee 10 pieces. For thus saith the Lord, the God of Israel, behold, I will rend the kingdom out of the hand of Solomon and will give 10 tribes to you. But he shall have one tribe for my servant David's sake and for Jerusalem's sake, the city which I have chosen out of all the tribes of Israel. Verse 33, because that they have forsaken, listen to this, this is the reason why, because they, under Solomon, have forsaken me and have worshipped Ashtoreth, the goddess of the Zidonians, Chemosh, the god of the Moabites, and Milcom, the god of the children of Ammon, and have not walked in my ways to do that which is right in my eyes and to keep my statutes and my judgments as did David his father. Howbeit, verse 34, I will not take the whole kingdom out of his hand, but I will make him prince all the days of his life for David my servant's sake, whom I chose because he kept my commandments and my statutes. Do you see that? Do you see that? So it's going back here to the record of David, all right, because Solomon is failing. And so the record of David is what God is looking at here. But verse 35, but I will take the kingdom out of his son's hand. So Solomon's not going to experience this. It's going to be his son. Who is his son? Rehoboam. That's who we're looking at in 2 Chronicles. And will give it unto thee, even 10 tribes. And unto his son will I give one tribe, that David, my servant, may have a light always before me in Jerusalem. Notice it's about David. Do you see that? That David will have a light before me in Jerusalem, the city which I have chosen me to put my name there. And I will take thee, and thou shalt reign according to all that thy soul desires, and shall be king over Israel. And it shall be, if thou wilt hearken unto all that I command thee, and will walk in my ways, and do that is right in my sight, to keep my statutes and my commandments, as David my servant did, that I will be with thee, and build thee a sure house, as I built for David, and I will give Israel unto thee. And I will for this afflict the seed of David, but not forever. Solomon sought therefore to kill Jeroboam, and Jeroboam arose and fled into Egypt unto Shishak the king of Egypt, and was in Egypt until the death of Solomon. Why would Solomon seek to kill Jeroboam? Solomon was full of self-ambition. He was self-absorbed. And now what we're finding is that Solomon, somewhere along the line, must have learned or heard of what took place here. And now Jeroboam is a threat. So this is to my knowledge and understanding interpretation, this was a known point that Jeroboam received this prophecy from the Lord. And so Solomon, in his depravity, is seeking to get rid of Jeroboam. But yet we have the word of the Lord on Jeroboam that you will be king over 10 tribes. Do you think Jeroboam is going to be king over 10 tribes? See, that's the power when you think of the word of the Lord and the word of his prophet. When the prophet speaks the word of the Lord, you've got to reckon, am I going to believe this or not? If you have a faith in the Almighty God, then you're not going to mess with that because it's already done. But when your eyes are not on God, as is Solomon here, then he's going to do foolish things and he's going to try to go against the word of the Lord. So we're going back to 2 Chronicles now. So that's the backstory. That's Jeroboam. And that's why now that Solomon is dead and Rehoboam is on the throne, Jeroboam has now come out of Egypt. In verse 3, I'm in chapter 10 of 2 Chronicles, verse 3, and they sent and called him. So Jeroboam and all Israel came and spake to Rehoboam, saying, thy father made our yoke grievous. Now therefore ease thou somewhat the grievous servitude of thy father and his heavy yoke that he put upon us, and we will serve thee. All right. Now, Jeroboam heard the words of the prophet. We see him and all of Israel, that probably most likely is just the leadership and elders of Israel, but they're coming as a group collectively to the new king, and they're making a request. They bring their request to him, asking for what? That there be an ease to the yoke of servitude upon them. Now, we aren't exactly told the extent of that yoke, but we can make some assumptions here. We know that Solomon, at least when he started out, did enslave non-Israelites. But those who were not of Israel, he did not enslave, but he incorporated them into leadership positions, into positions of battle. If you just look over in 2 Chronicles chapter 8, in verses 7 through 10, as for the people that were left of the Hittites, the Amorites, the Perizzites, Hevites, Jebusites, which are not of Israel, but of their children who were left after them in the land, whom the children of Israel consumed not, them did Solomon make to pay tribute until this day. But the children of Israel did Solomon make no servants for his work, but they were men of war, and chief of his captains, and captains of his chariots and horsemen. And these were the chief of King Solomon's officers, even 250 that bear rule over the people. So we get that little glimmer there of the way he handled the people under him. You also look at chapter 9 and verse 7, the words of the queen of Sheba. She, in her observation, notices that the men are happy under Solomon and that they're happy as his servants that stand, verse 7, stand continually before thee and hear thy wisdom. Now, this most likely is earlier on in Solomon's reign. He reigned for 40 years. We do know that he had a lot of building projects. So later on in his reign, did he bring about a heavier yoke of work? Very likely, and this could be what Jeroboam and the people of Israel are referencing. They're asking for an ease of the servitude. And so Rehoboam says in verse 5 of chapter 10, and he said unto them, come again unto me after 3 days. And the people departed. All right, so now Rehoboam has a decision to make. I believe he's taking an exam. This is a test of wisdom. I think it's interesting that Solomon, his father, was granted by God wisdom. And he was known for that wisdom, for making decisions that baffled people, that caused people to just be amazed. And now Rehoboam, his son, is faced with a decision and he needs wisdom. He needs to have the ability to take the knowledge and everything that's coming at him and rightly, apply it to the people under his authority. So, he asks for 3 days. And verse 6 says, and King Rehoboam took counsel. Is it good to take counsel? You're smart, that's good. It depends on the counsel, huh? Yeah, it depends on the counsel. I would say, generally speaking, it is good to seek counsel. I think that's wise, but you're right. Who are you seeking counsel? Now, so look at this. He first starts by seeking counsel of the old men that had stood before Solomon, his father, while he yet lived. All right, so here's the exam, and the first test here is counsel with his father's court. These are the old men that stood before his father. The text tells us they're old. He says, what counsel give you me to return answer to this people? And verse 7 is their response. They spake unto him, saying, if thou be kind to this people, and please them, and speak good words to them, they will be thy servants forever. Now, taking a step back and thinking through their response, you have a judgment as a reader, right? As a reader of this, you're considering, is this wisdom? Is this good advice or not good advice? Well, verse 8, but he forsook the counsel which the old men gave him and took counsel with the young men that were, look at this, that were brought up with him that stood before him. And he said unto them, verse 9, what advice give you that we may return answer to this people, which have spoken to me, saying, ease somewhat the yoke that thy father did put upon us. And the young men that were brought up with him spake unto him, saying, thus shalt thou answer the people that spake unto thee, saying, thy father made our yoke heavy, but make thou it somewhat lighter for us. Thus thou shalt say unto them, here's their advice, my little finger shall be thicker than my father's loins. All right, so loins is this area of the body. And so So whatever Solomon was doing, their little finger would be as thick as so his loin, it would be that much bigger, magnified. So in other words, they're recommending that the yoke of bondage be magnified. Verse 11, "For whereas my father put a heavy yoke upon you, I will put more to your yoke. My father chastised you with whips, I will chastise you with scorpions." All right, so that's the response that they recommend. So now, what's Rehoboam going to say to the people after they return in 3 days? What's he going to do? Whose advice would he go for? And so you as a reader, and this is one of the interesting things that we sometimes overlook, is we get to make a decision, don't we? In some way, we get to think about, well, what would I say? What would I think is the best decision? If I were King Rehoboam, who would I listen to? That's one of the adventures of Bible reading, that you can walk down that road and think through it, and you don't have any consequences because it's already laid out in the scriptures for you. But the exercise is good because it's forcing you to contemplate and think through how this decision was made, whether it is wise or unwise. The counselors, who are they? Verse 12, "So Jeroboam and all the people came to Rehoboam on the third day, as the king bade, saying, 'Come again to me on the third day.' And the king answered them roughly," is that a clue? "Roughly, and King Rehoboam forsook the counsel of the old men." I want you to note that phrase is repeated. Did you see that? You saw that forsook in verse 8. He forsook the counsel of the old men. And here you're seeing it again in verse 13. He forsook the counsel of the old men. Verse 14, "And he answered them after the advice of the young men, saying, 'My father made your yoke heavy, but I will add thereto. My father chastised you with whips, but I will chastise you with scorpions.' So the king..." Now listen to this. This is incredible. "So the king hearkened not unto the people, for the cause was of God, that the Lord might perform his word, which he spake by the hand of Ahijah the Shilonite to Jeroboam the son of Nebat." So, think about what's just said there. What is said there? The outcome was already determined, wasn't it? Because God had already spoken. God had already told Jeroboam that he would be a king over 10 tribes. And so this whole scenario that Rehoboam is going through, and Jeroboam is giving us an opportunity to see how God takes the affairs of men and accomplishes his purposes in his own way and his own time. These are things we don't always recognize and see, but we can trust that God will always keep his word. You know, was Rehoboam thinking about, "Oh, that's right, you know, Jeroboam, he was told by the prophet this, that, and..." You know what? Maybe. And maybe he said, "Well, we'll see about that." I find it so compelling, this verse that God gives to us. That this was the cause. God was doing this. God was working, performing his very word in this process. God knew about the upcoming division. He had prophesied it. Just a couple other instances of things like this. in 1 Samuel chapter 2. Because I just want you to see, this is not just purely an isolated incident with Eli and his wicked sons. So 1 Samuel chapter 2, we read these words. So 1 Samuel 2:25, it says, "If one man sin against another, the judge shall judge him. But if a man sin against the Lord, who shall entreat for him? Notwithstanding, they hearkened not unto the voice of their father, because the Lord would slay them." All right, so if you want to understand more of that, just check that out. But Eli had wicked sons, and he spoke to them just prior, rebuking them. They didn't listen, but it was already something that God knew was going to happen, and he knew that he would slay them for their transgression, for their sin. Go to 2 Samuel chapter 17. 2 Samuel chapter 17. So this is during the revolt of rebellion of Absalom against his father David. And so Absalom is in the process of figuring out what is the best decision for him now that he is in control of Jerusalem. And so he's seeking counsel of Ahithophel and Hushai, two counselors that his father David had had. If you look at 2 Samuel 17 and verse 14, we read, "And Absalom and all the men of Israel said, the counsel of Hushai the Archite is better than the counsel of Ahithophel." Now notice, "For the Lord had appointed to defeat the good counsel of Ahithophel to the intent that the Lord might bring evil upon Absalom." Now, Absalom didn't know all of those details, wasn't privy to those kinds of things, but we as readers of the Scriptures get to see that God is in the details, that God is at work in all of these things, because Absalom sought out both of them for counsel on what he was to do with his father David. Both of them gave their thoughts, their opinions, their view. And Absalom chose the counsel of Hushai. And we can look at the text and we can say the Lord had appointed that to happen to defeat the good counsel of Ahithophel, because to the intent that the Lord might bring evil upon Absalom. In other words, God wanted Absalom to fail in his rebellion against his father. The wicked will fight and do all they can, but ultimately, who holds control? Who's calling the shots? Who knows the affairs of men, and who's got a plan? God does. He knows how it ends. He's got it all planned out. So, isn't it interesting the things we can learn just from these kings in 2 Chronicles? So this brings us to the question, what's the lesson for us? How am I to glean wisdom from this example of Rehoboam? Because we know that God said Jeroboam was going to succeed and have 10 tribes and be a king, and indeed that is what happens. That's exactly what happens. So let's talk a little bit about the council. And just drive with me here. The council of his father's court. Did you notice the older men counseled kindness? Try to please them. Speak good words to them. And they assured him, "They'll be your servants forever. They'll stick with you to the end." I mean, who wouldn't want that? Loyal, devoted subjects. Be kind. You know what that means? Humble yourself. Rehoboam, you got to back off a little bit. You got to lighten up a little bit. Stop looking at yourself as almighty. Humble yourself. The young, what's the counsel of his peers? Notice they are young men that were brought up with him. And you note that it is increased bondage. It is speaking roughly. There is a lack of respect. They are not kind words. Wow. Decisions are going to come our way in life. Seeking counsel, it is wise. Proverbs 19:20 says, "Hear counsel and receive instruction, that thou mayest be wise in thy latter end." Proverbs 19:20. There is a good reason to seek counsel. Now, who are we to seek counsel from? I think there is a measure of wisdom here. You see that Rehoboam, he took time, 3 days. Doesn't mean we have to take time in 3 days, but it is interesting that he gave himself a time limit and time to think through and options to consider. His counsel, he had the older men. Now, older men in your life, what do they offer? Or older women, for that sake. What are they going to offer you that you and your peers don't have? Experience. You have experience, knowledge, judgment. Yeah, it's interesting that we realize that, and we don't have to study real long to come to grips with that those older people in our life, usually, let's say usually, because there are some foolish older people, all right? Foolish older people. But older folks offer experience and discernment and judgment, as you guys have already recognized. Older people have gone through, been there, done that kind of experience. Often older people are able to speak with a greater clarity and authority because they are older. They have the experience, and so they can speak with less of a fear of being judged, because especially in these days, usually the older were greatly respected. Sadly, that's going away in America today. But typically, and around the world, it's pretty normal that the older generation is highly valued and respected. So there is wisdom in surrounding yourself with older men or older women, and to seek counsel from them. Now, the danger of just seeking counsel with your peers. Now, can you seek counsel from your peers? Sure. Sure you can. But and what do your peers have to offer you? There's a familiarity, so they know you. Why are you so quiet? Okay, so there's an equality there, equal footing, equal ground. Yep. Yep. Yes, but he's got years of experience behind him. Yes. Yeah, but you know, there's peer pressure in our life, right? And all of us experience peer pressure. And our peers are walking life just like we are. They're living and experiencing things just like us. And they don't have that benefit of experience that the older generation has. And so I just find it interesting the Bible gives us this account. And I think we need to pay attention to it. Who do you seek wisdom from and counsel from? Who are you going to listen to in your life? Who are you going to surround yourself with? When you got the big decisions in life, I encourage you to seek counsel and to include in that group older men and women who have demonstrated a track record of trusting God. Proverbs 3, 5, and 6, we know it so well, but why do we not include that in the qualities of a counselor? Trust in the Lord with all thine heart, and lean not on thine own understanding. In all thy ways acknowledge him, and he shall direct thy paths. What an incredible quality. You don't see Rehoboam seeking God here, do you? I mean, you don't see anybody seeking God. I would give you that. I'll admit that. And in fact, Rehoboam didn't have the greatest example of a father towards the end of his life. But nevertheless, as we consider counselors in our life, they have demonstrated a track record of a relationship with God. That's going to produce wisdom. There's going to be fruit of their life that is good. Yes. So with this in mind, I think it's important for you to hear James' word on wisdom. Because as you seek counselors, you need to know who you're looking for. What are you looking for in a counselor? Well, you're looking for somebody, obviously, that's going to give you wisdom. Well, there's two kinds of wisdom. There's the wisdom of the earth and the wisdom from above. And James lays that out for us in James 3, verses 13 through 18. Now, pay attention to this and think about what we've just read in 2 Chronicles. James 3:13. Who is a wise man and endued with knowledge among you? Let him show out of a good conversation or good conduct his works with meekness of wisdom. But if you have bitter envying and strife in your hearts, glory not and lie not against the truth. This wisdom descends not from above, but it's earthly, sensual, devilish. For where envying and strife is, there is confusion in every evil work. But, verse 17, the wisdom that is from above is first pure, then peaceable, gentle, easy to be entreated, full of mercy, good fruits, without partiality, without hypocrisy. And the fruit of righteousness is sown in peace of them that make peace. Wow. May God use this example of King Rehoboam to help us in life as we have decisions to make. And we do, don't we? And we will. God encourages us to hear the counsel, receive instruction. Proverbs chapter 16, as we wrap up, I want you to note Proverbs chapter 16, the whole chapter is really a great guide for decision making, but just notice a couple of these verses here. Chapter 16, verse 3, commit thy works unto the Lord, and thy thoughts shall be established. Did you hear that? That commit thy works, that word commit is actually the idea of unrolling. So as I've been trying to apply this in my own life, in my mind, I'm unrolling. Like today, as I was praying this for my day today, Lord, I've got to do Sunday school, and I've got to preach in the morning, and I've got to preach in the evening, and I've got to lead my family at lunchtime. And so I'm unrolling these things out, the works that I've got to do today. I know I've got these things ahead of me. So I'm unrolling it out. And I'm doing this before the Lord. Because God's word says to do it, and it says this, your thoughts shall be established. And so I'm going to believe by faith that God knows what he's talking about. I want you to notice in verse 14, the wrath of a king is as a messenger of death, but a wise man will pacify it. In the light of the king's countenance is life, and his favor is as a cloud of the latter rain. How much better is it to get wisdom than gold? And to get understanding rather to be chosen than silver. The highway of the upright is to depart from evil. He that keeps his way preserves his soul. Now look at verse 18. Pride goes before destruction, and a haughty spirit before a fall. Better it is to be of a humble spirit with the lowly than to divide the spoil with the proud. He that handles a matter wisely shall find good, and whoso trusteth in the Lord, happy is he. God, thank you for your wisdom, and I thank you for teaching us this evening and challenging our hearts. In Jesus' name, amen.